You Better You Bet on Radio.com and the Radio.com app.
Got to react to what we saw in the NBA last night. And the big story in the NBA last night was the big three and the dud that they laid in Cleveland against the Cavaliers. As they were a 10.5-point favorite going into the game, Colin Sexton scored 15 points in that second overtime. He dropped in what finished, I believe, with 42 in the game. The Cavaliers shot 50% from the floor, 51% from three. The big three of Harden, Durant, and Kyrie scored 96 combined points. I think they got just 14 points from their bench. There wasn't a lot there besides Joe Harris, who played 42 minutes coming off the bench for the Brooklyn Nets. And the Nets lose the game outright in double overtime to the Cleveland Cavaliers. And you're not going to decide. It'd be foolish long-term. If you've got a long-term bet on the Brooklyn Nets to win the Eastern Conference, I wouldn't be all of a sudden alarmed by what I saw last night in Cleveland. But there is work to do for Steve Nash, Mike D'Antoni, Jacques Vaughn, that staff, to get this big three on the same page defensively, something that Steve Nash talked about after the game, and also for Sean Marks to add some quality depth pieces to this team, because that bench is not all that deep.
Yeah, totally. I am absolutely fascinated by this team. I would just like to start with that. And I'm more captivated by them than most teams that fit this description in most seasons. So you'll have in any NBA season, obviously it's a star-driven league. The star-driven teams are given the most pub and notoriety coverage in media, whether you watch SportsCenter or, you know, any kind of NBA show or consume it on Twitter. So, you know, in years past, we've had these assemblies of these star teams, right? And for this one, for a variety, actually, I wouldn't say for whatever reason, because I know why, but it's this one just really, I'm so interested every night to watch it. I'm more interested than I think I am in most super teams and most, especially teams that are returning that are champions, even that have added a piece. I'm more interested in watching the Nets than I am watching the Lakers right now. I'm more interested in watching the Nets than I am watching the Clippers right now. I'm more definitely the Bucks. I feel like the Bucks are just, I'm like tired of the Bucks almost at this point. I'm captivated by this team, but let's start even before the game started, because I think that's a good way to start unpacking this game. A brief note about the market and how the market views the Nets now. You mentioned what they closed at in the game. Let's kind of just repeat that, because I think it bears repeating, and then a little bit of analysis about where that places the Nets in the NBA. Close 10.5 on the road against a team that is not a bottom three team in the league. They're probably like 25, in the 23 to 25 range, I would say. Maybe a tiny bit worse than that, but it's not, they aren't 30th by a mile or something. This isn't, you know, like playing the Jets in week 7 in this past NFL season. This is like playing, you know, Denver or Washington or something, you know, just like an equivalent NFL team. And they closed 10.5 on the road. That type of, if you use that closing number as any kind of measuring stick of where they fit into other teams in the league, let's take two kind of what we consider the two powerhouse teams, at least in the regular season in the market, or Milwaukee and the Lakers. Each team this season has closed a very similar number against a very similar type of team on the road. I believe the Lakers closed 10.5 at Oklahoma City. I think Milwaukee closed 10.5 at Detroit and 13 at the Knicks. So it really kind of gives you an idea, just again, forgetting even what you saw in the game last night. Just if we look at the closing number in the market and think it's valuable, which we should, it's a very, very, very good measurement of how good a team is. Then that number, even as a starting point, tells us that this team is in that league from a sort of a rating standpoint, or like a broad kind of power ranking standpoint, that it's like Milwaukee and the Lakers, and those two teams play tonight, and we'll talk about that game in the Power Hour. And I believe Milwaukee's a 2-point home favorite right now. And so, okay, there's maybe some small margin between those teams, and the Nets are like right there from a rating standpoint, where if these teams played each other, and we had Milwaukee play Brooklyn the other night without Kyrie, it's really not a big difference just in terms of the market. Now, if you want to bet into those numbers, if you think that's silly and Brooklyn's worse, great. And you are welcome to do so. Or if you think the opposite, Brooklyn's actually much better, that's fine. But just from how they're measured by all of us kind of collectively together betting into this market, I thought that was almost not the most interesting point, but a great place to start is just the market views Brooklyn with this collection of players in a very similar tier to Milwaukee and the Lakers, who are the best two teams in the league. I thought that was a fascinating place to start here.
Yeah, you know what? I think it is. And the issue, though, is, right, Milwaukee and the Lakers are further along as a team.
Sure.
So, no, I mean, question. And that's the difference here. So you look at the assemblance of talent and you say, well, Kyrie and Harden and Durant, well, look at how great those three players are. Well, but the Nets aren't a better team than the Lakers right now, and they're not a better team than the Milwaukee Bucks. They might be at the end of the year, but right now, and that's where maybe you looked at that game last night and said, well, if I know what the Cavs are, and they're not, as you mentioned, they're not a bottom three team, but I know what the Cavs are. Sexton hadn't played in five games. He was coming back, and he played really, really well, as we all witnessed last night. But there was a lot of unknown to that 10.5 for the Brooklyn Nets. How was the rest of the team going to return with Kyrie Irving coming back and after missing seven consecutive games? How was it going to work offensively with Kyrie, Harden, and Durant on the court at the same time? Who was going to play the third wheel? Who was going to be Batman? Who was going to be Robin? All of these things are going to work out on the court, mind you. I mean, James Harden's barely practiced. He's played three games. Kyrie Irving made a return to one practice and then was back on the court last night in Cleveland, Ken. So you might have looked at that game and said, you know, I had a buddy of mine text me before the game and said, I love the Cavaliers plus the 10.5 tonight. Yep. Because there's great unknown with Brooklyn. I'm not telling you that the Cavs are a better basketball team, but if Colin Sexton is going to return and he's going to play, I know it's going to be a work in progress for those three on the court that I'll roll the dice. I don't trust them defensively. I'll take Cleveland at home plus the 10.5 because I'm going to take a wait and see approach to when this team finally does figure it out on the court, but it's not going to be game one.
And that's such a, it's so funny. You're saying you got a text from a friend. I would view that as a very smart form of analysis. You know, whether you wanted to apply it to last night's game or not, of just challenging assumptions. There was an assumption in the market, which I just kind of reiterated, that this team was being rated like those teams. And if you wanted to play against that, play against it. I was a little more chicken. I was texting all my friends at halftime. Like, I think Cavs second half is the absolute nuts. Like, I think it's incredible. They were up 2, second half line was Nets 8.5. And I was like, well, we already have a half of evidence that this game is not going the way the market has anticipated. And there was tremendous unknown coming into the game. So a lot of times in that situation, I will wait till halftime to make a bet in like a really high profile game where there's a ton of unknown and like, okay, I risk something. I risk that there won't be a valuable bet anymore, that the Cavs will be up 20 and I can't really manipulate the spread in a way to create something that I think is valuable. But even just your friend texting you that, I think is a great form of analysis. Maybe it's not the only tool in the toolbox for the better, but maybe it's one of the tools in the toolbox. Are there games on any given night? And I talk about this with the NFL sometimes with Nick, like where are assumptions being made that maybe you could challenge? I'll give you an example. There's a college basketball game starting in about 35 minutes between USC and Stanford. Stanford's missing their three best players. Somebody asked me about the line move earlier. So Stanford was a 1-point favorite last night before we had injury announcements. They are now a 6-point underdog. And somebody was like, well, what do you make of this team? And I go, well, I mean, it's the injuries. It's also that we don't know what the bottom is. We've never seen this collection of Stanford players before. How would we know how to even rate this team? I've never seen them. Don't even know who's going to play. I mean, I have no idea. How would you even make a number? How would you even make a number? How would you make a number on the Nets with the three players together? We've never seen it before. So like, it's just, you know, is there an assumption being made about those players? And the assumption last night was they're as good as Milwaukee, they're as good as the Lakers. That's what your friend wanted to push against. And with this college basketball game, if you felt like, okay, well, there's an assumption that these guys matter so much for Stanford, they're worth 7 points, and the total has dropped 6 points, I think, which I think is crazy. And I like the over in the game. But, you know, challenge those assumptions. What is the assumptions being made where we have no evidence, right? Where we have no data points. There's never been a game before like this. And if you can kind of challenge some of those assumptions, I do think valuable bets can kind of arise as a result of that. And I think, you know, your friend, whether he realized he was going to get that much praise from me or not, I think your friend had kind of a moment of clarity last night in analyzing this game.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, I gave him credit after that game went final or as that game was progressing, because I agree with you. At halftime, you just got the sense the Cavaliers were not going anywhere and the Nets had no interest in playing any defense. I mean, that's the other
less than zero.
Yeah. Right. Less than there was. I mean, there was no effort defensively and there was really no effort for Cleveland. But the Cavaliers were going up against, you know, the three headed monster. I think that might might be something, Ken, that I take out of that game last night. Listen, I think the Nets will be fine. I think there'll be adjustments. I think Nash talking about emphasizing defense. I don't want to make kind of bold declarations or hot takes coming out of one game. This is going to fail, or this is not going to work, or this is going to be a disaster, because it's going to take time, and they're not going to be defined by what they do game in and game out in the regular season. They're going to be defined, if this works, by what they do come playoff time. We all understand that. That's why this trade was made, to win an NBA championship. One thing I will say, though, until they figure it out defensively, until they get somebody down low, I mean, there are going to be boatloads of points scored in Brooklyn Net games. That is one thing that I think is going to lean on. I mean, they might be too heavily of a favorite. I don't know if I trust them as a heavy favorite until they figure something out defensively, because I don't think they're going to get many stops. But because they're not going to get many stops, I think as an NBA fan, as a handicapper going into Net games, if you look at the matchups, listen, if Durant Harden and Kyrie are playing, they're going to give you 90 to 100. I mean, they are.
Which is crazy,
I mean,
to say out loud. Yeah.
But it is. I mean, they're going to give you, I mean, maybe I'm a little, maybe I should go 85 to 100, but they're going to give you, I mean, they're going to score. I mean, they are going to score, but they're going to stop absolutely nobody in those games. You're going to get a lot of points and that game doesn't need to necessarily go to double overtime for that game to see a boatload of points in Net games here moving forward.
Right. So I totally agree with you. If you're a listener of our show and you're listening to this right now, you're like, well, when will be my next opportunity to take advantage of this information? Will they play the Cavs again tomorrow night? And the number, we just had openers come out for NBA recently. Opener on this game was a very tiny bit less than yesterday's. I see 9.5 and I see a juice 10 in a couple places. So whatever, a point off of the close. And again, that's not, we don't even know where we're headed. This could easily close 10.5 again. It could close more than that. Total 227, which again, given the Cavs and their propensity to score like 85 points a game, just tells you kind of what Moose is saying about the Nets offense going forward. My other kind of big takeaway here, so the market stuff, which I think is even maybe the most interesting, but the on-court is also very interesting. The most interesting on-court aspect of this to me is I have like two thoughts that are kind of pulling against each other. One is that, like, I think Steve Nash is a dope as a head coach. That's one. So that's one thought. And that's not, I'm not going to actually bag the Nets because I have a competing thought that kind of gives him a little bit more credit. I don't know what the point is of playing the guys 50 minutes last night. It's like a net negative in life, in the season. It's a net negative. Forget if you even win the game or not. The idea that you would put 50 minutes on all three of those bodies when two of those guys have significant injury history, and Harden is notorious for getting burnt out in the regular season and then being terrible in the playoffs. Yes, let's play all three of them 50 minutes. What a great idea. And I look at the minutes played last night. I watched the game start to finish. And the entire time I'm like, we're just going with, I mean, the writers gave Nash a break. They're like, hey, he played an 8-man rotation. I mean, barely. He played like a 6-man rotation. I mean, like nobody got off the court. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And it's funny because you look at the Cavs box score and you're like, well, the Cavs did the same thing. The Cavs have like 9 injured players right now. Like, I'm watching Darius Garland and Kevin Love do like somersaults on the bench while watching the game. The Cavs have a problem. The Nets ain't waiting for anybody. Like, this is the team. This is the team that's available. They're still playing 8 guys and they're really playing 6. So like, that's one. I have two thoughts. One is just how can you do that and like think it's a good idea? Because if the whole point is to win later, then like surely you must understand that having these guys play 50 minutes in a January game against the Cavs is a net negative, because it's the overall fatigue of the team in a compressed season. These guys are really likely to get re-injured, like two of them very likely to get re-injured and have a tremendous injury history of that, especially Kyrie, who's basically is like the body of a 38-year-old at this point. And so that's kind of thought number one, is like, what on earth are you doing with these minutes and managing this rotation? But then I listened to Durant afterwards, and this kind of tells you all you need to know about maybe why Nash was picked as the coach. You know, players coach, I get to do whatever I want. And they were all saying, basically, this was Durant after the game, this was Kyrie after the game, well, like, we're not going to get to practice a lot because the condensed season, there's like no practices. So like the three of us are never going to get a chance to figure out what we're going to do. So we need to be on the court literally as much as possible. And like, those are our practices to figure it out. I think that partly explains why you saw the defense that you saw last night. We're just going to show up and figure it out. And this season, that's how we're going to have to do it. So it's almost like I want to dock Nash and the coaching staff for what they did. But then I listen to the players and I'm like, well, they don't care and they would prefer it. So like, I don't even know where I'm at here, but that dynamic, that's a very unique dynamic of like, let's play everyone as much as possible to try to practice this out in a game that matters. Like that, that's one of the reasons I find this so captivating is just the uniqueness of this season matched with this team and just how many minutes these guys might end up logging between now and the playoffs.
Yeah, good point. I mean, I think those minutes are going to have to be cut down. Now we're looking at extreme example last night because it was a double overtime game, right? So, right. You know, that's an extreme example, but Ken, I think it's
played a lot anyway. Overtime or not, they would have played. There were only eight.
No, they would have played. No, I get it. I understand the point that you're making, and it's a fair point. And here's the deal: they have to get Marks has got to add depth to the team. He's also got to stagger the players on the court when with Kyrie, Durant, and Harden too. I know they all want to be on the court at the same time, but you're not going to be able to do that because you want to make sure that this team is fresh come playoff time. And here's the other thing where you could be critical of Nash last night: how do you not foul up three? End of the first overtime, 5.2 seconds to go, and allow Colin Sexton to shoot a three to tie the game up to go into double overtime. Because if you were betting that game live going into double overtime, you know, I would have bet anything. That Net team was flat on their feet. They were exhausted. They were dead. I mean, they had nothing in that second overtime. Once Colin Sexton hit that three at the end of the first overtime, that was game, set, match for Brooklyn. There was no way Cleveland was losing that game. They end up winning that game going away by 12. You know, that was a terrible decision by Steve Nash. And, you know, this is outside kind of like, you know, the parameters of, you know, handicapping edge or looking at the numbers. But if you're just one that has a future bet on the Brooklyn Nets, and maybe you had a future bet on the Brooklyn Nets before they acquired James Harden, which is extremely valuable, you have concern now when you look at Steve Nash of just how good of an in-game coach he is and whether he can make the right in-game decisions with this group. Because there are going to be those decisions, regardless of how talented a team is, there are going to be points where a coach is going to have to make a decision that might sway the game one way or the other in a playoff series.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you said. I think if you're like me and you are skeptical, would be the right word, of Steve Nash as a head coach without getting too malicious or critical through only 15 games of the season, skeptical, highly skeptical, I would say, that's certainly an arrow in your quiver, right? If you're you look at the end of game foul situation last night, you could not imagine a situation where fouling would have been a better idea, where you played your guys a 100% of the time. And that's also, I think you look at the final score last night, and I mean, it couldn't be more misleading. The Nets were like a 90% win probability with 5 seconds left in overtime. So I mean, it's not like, oh, they lost by 12. It's like, well, that's not really like what the game actually was. This was a one possession game either way, and the Nets were actually like 90% to win in the first overtime and then allowed Colin Sexton to make a three. On the Nash point, that's a part of what wraps into making this, again, extremely fascinating. If the minutes and the offense and late game situations, if this is all being left to the players, and I got to be honest, like, it's possible that it is like, and it's people like, that's crazy. Like, there's no way, there's just no coaching. I mean, there's no way. Is it impossible given the players involved? Like, is it impossible? So like, I think there's such a wide range of outcomes here. I mean, almost all of them are generally positive. Team's going to make the playoffs there. I mean, their absolute dead floor is like the second round of the playoffs, but I would say, realistically, the floor is like a loss to a team they shouldn't lose to in the conference finals. And probably the likely outcome is loss in the NBA finals. But like, if you're looking at this, like, what is happening here? Because even the offense, so the defense is zero. I mean, the defense, they have like 100 things to work on. Nothing. They have, feels like they've done no work whatsoever. Offensively, it's like a lot of Harden pick and roll, and Durant and Kyrie are spot up shooters. Or it's like an occasional set to get one of them a shot, but it's like falling back into Houston offense, which is interesting because D'Antoni's on the staff, where so many of the ISO, like so many possessions were ISO James Harden or James Harden pick and roll with a big DeAndre Jordan, got some early alley-oop dunks and stuff. But the dirty secret of this team, and they'll never do it in a million years. So this isn't like a first takey. They need to do this. They're never going to do it. The best version of this team is Kyrie plays with the second unit. It's by far the best version of the team. It's like not even close. Kyrie is such an overlap and an extra thing you don't need on the court at the same time as Harden. I mean, it's like not even, I don't even know if this is like that controversial of an opinion. It's just never going to happen. if you could stagger the minutes as such where Kyrie becomes the sixth man, like the greatest sixth man in, you know, the history of the NBA, basically, the ceiling of the team is astronomical. You could put a bum in as the fifth guy instead of him on the court because Harden and Durant are taking 100% of the shots, or Joe Harris takes an occasional spot up three. Like, it's just, it would go so much better if that was the case. Will they ever do anything to kind of even close to rock the boat with this group of players? I would say no. And given what we already know about the coaching staff, how it was selected, how they performed last night, what we hear from the players. So that's an extra wrinkle here, right? That you're speaking about Steve Nash as an in-game coach. What I'm saying is, like, if the players are kind of in charge of this thing and it's these three guys, like, there are a lot of potential pitfalls and obstacles that are going to come along the way. And I have no idea how any of this is going to be handled.
Yeah, and listen, it's Durant's franchise. I mean, if you want to ask, I mean, it is. KD is pulling the strings.
Ask Kyrie about that.
Yeah, Kyrie. I mean, but that it's the truth. I mean, Kevin sure. Durant has got the people I talked to. Kevin Durant's got the owner's ear. You know, that's why James Harden's there. And Ken, I think you make a fair point. I just don't think that'll ever happen. I don't think
Kyrie will ever
say and put his ego aside and saying, yeah, I'm willing to come off the bench and be the sixth man for this team. I think it's a fair assessment when you look at what could be the best of this group, the best of this team. I like that. I just don't think you'll ever get it because I don't think Kyrie Irving's ego will ever allow that to happen.
Yeah, and it's almost the most frustrating part, right? And it was one of the geniuses or the genius things about the Harden Chris Paul era was, okay, like, you're both starting for 3 minutes. and then after 3 minutes, we're just blowing the whole fucking thing up. I mean, it's just not even like you're really not both starting. We're just staggering your minutes completely so that one of you is on the court at the same time. What will be like, how outlandish in a good way will the rotation get if they're really only going to, cause like, it's like, let's be honest, there's probably, I mean, it's the starting five. Maybe you can get some TLC minutes. You should be playing Bruce Brown a pretty good amount. And like, that's it. If that's it, then like, you kind of owe it to yourself to like plug in somebody. Like, what if you just played, what if Tyler Johnson started for Kyrie or came in at 9 minutes to go in the first quarter? And again, Tyler Johnson is like he's like the poor, 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 poor man's Kyrie Irving.
Right.
And like, you don't even need him to do anything. He just needs to occupy space basically and like defend a little bit. So that's what I mean. It's just, there's like an oversaturation when all three of them are on the court for, you know, save the final 3 minutes or whatever, when you want to run these specific sets, but like, there's just, it's an oversaturation. So like, you're actually at a certain point, you're not gaining anything more, right? So let's say who's like a high volume shooter on another team. I'm trying to figure of like, what is the right person to plug into this example? Like if they randomly acquired Chris Middleton.
Okay.
That's a bad example. Cause he could be a spot up 3-point shooter, I guess. Kemba? But just like some high volume player, like Colin Sexton, like they just got Colin Sexton for nothing. Cleveland was like, here you, like after the game last night, Colin Sexton missed the flight and they were like, just stay here. Then just like, do you gain anything from that? If Colin Sexton started with the other three, do you gain anything from that? No, there are no more shots. You don't gain anything and he doesn't defend very well. So like, what did you gain from putting him on the court at the same time? But what if it's like, oh, we got Colin Sexton and he's going to play the entire second quarter when everybody sits, like, or the first 6 minutes of the second quarter. Okay. Now you gain something. Well, that's the way it's already working with these three players.
Well,
you're
that's
not
it.
Gaining anything, and you're losing a ton defensively. That's the other part of it.
Well, that's the other issue. It's if you go back in that Miami Heat example, it's a little bit different because all three of those guys had their own, you know, LeBron was a forward, Wade was a guard, Bosch was a big man. So it's a little bit different than the setup that the Brooklyn Nets have right now. But, you know, you need that kind of Shane Battier type of stop. You need the guy that's going to be there, that's going to be that defender. You need that guy that knows his role, glue guy, whatever coach phrase that you want to throw in that this Net team understand that can be successful, that knows his role, that knows he might get a tip back dunk, you know, at some point, but there's going to be no offense going your way, is willing to do kind of that dirty and get his hands dirty and do the kind of the necessary job for this team offensively and defensively. And they need more than just one of those guys. They need about two or three of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up Battier, I mean, they also had, again, a ton of guys who didn't have to take a ton of shots, right? Mario Chalmers probably always felt like he should shoot more, but he still didn't end up actually shooting more. Birdman played on that team, probably shot once in a game. You know, guys like that. Those
well, Mike Miller.
Anthony was a big guy on that team. So, guys who just aren't going to shoot. Don't need to shoot whatsoever. Need zero shots. Zero. But from a, again, to just spin this into a tiny bit more gambling conversation, and then we can go to NFL if you want. So again, next game, they open, I see 10 and 227 against the Cavs tomorrow night. That's a 7:30 Eastern tip-off. That'll be interesting to see where that number lands. Do we get where we got in game one? Is there a small kind of reduction? First of all, I haven't seen an injury report for that game. That would also be significant. How close are we to Darius Garland coming back? Are any of the three going to play again or going to not play? So I think just that game presents a couple interesting questions going forward, but also from a player prop standpoint, again, I'm not somebody who sort of dabbles in the NBA player props, although I'm aware of some of how the market works. How are we adjusting projections for the three players based on what we saw in one game? The takeaway from a player prop standpoint, the obvious spotlight talking point is that James Harden didn't shoot very much, because there were not very many shots available. And Kyrie and Durant took, 80% of the shots on the team, basically. So from a player prop standpoint, if you think that's predictive, if you think that means that's, and James Harden said, are they like trying to be unselfish? Like this has been his thing since he got there. Like, I'm going to try to be as unselfish as possible. If you think that's his thing, how are the markets reacting to what we saw last night? Is his point total, does it start being priced at 18.5 or 17.5 instead of, a more traditional like mid-20, like we would probably see for the other two players? I think that's interesting. Do his assists and rebounds just get flown through the roof? Because what we're seeing is possessions where he has the ball all the time. And those types of possessions, especially if he's creating more, I mean, he might average a triple-double the rest of the season. Totally possible. So just from a prop standpoint, I think that stuff is all that people are going to want to bet those every game on all those guys. And people are going to want to bet on the Nets a lot. They were the most public team last night by a mile in the NBA. I think in a bunch of square books, they had like 97% of the bets were on the Nets. And that didn't mean that the Nets weren't going to cover. That's not a reason to make a bet. But it's just interesting to see that, much like with the Lakers, where it's, you always wait close to tip off in Lakers games for West Coast money to come in. Cause it's like, oh, look, all the people in LA are betting on the Lakers. And if you go to like Vegas casinos or LA casinos, like the Lakers line might even be shaded a little bit more. Cause like people just want to bet on the Lakers. This is going to happen again. People are going to want to bet on the Nets every game. They're going to bet overs on everybody. It'll be curious, how the market responds. And then also in these player prop markets, does the market expect James Harden to keep getting less and the other two to get more, or does everything kind of stay the same? Like, I don't think we're going to learn the answer yet.
Yeah, a good one. Before we get to the NFL here, I will say this, and I'm curious to see what that number is for Harden tomorrow night on his point total. I would probably have a tendency to take the over, because I do think last night, and you look at the shots that were taken, it was Kyrie with 28, Durant with 25, James Harden had 14. He only had two shots that he took in that entire first half. And you mentioned, Ken, the logic, the reasoning behind it. I also think with Kyrie's first game back for the Brooklyn Nets, they wanted to make sure that Kyrie Irving was heavily involved in the offense. So that's kind of an angle to look into now going into game two. We saw that Irving got his 28 shots. I would not expect James Harden to have a shot total under 20 tomorrow night. I think I would not expect him to go to the first half where he's only taking two shots, even though he's willing to take on this kind of secondary role with the Brooklyn Nets. I would expect that to be up tomorrow night. I think I'm fascinated to see what the number is for him tomorrow night against the Cleveland Cavaliers. But if you set that in the, if you're giving me a number, I don't know, what 23, 24, I think he's going over tomorrow night. I think James Harden's going to have himself a night against the Cleveland Cavaliers with that team being back home in Brooklyn.
I love it. A little prop thoughts from the Moose. Yeah, I mean, I think with all of these guys, it might be its own market almost, where you have to – there's like probably a form of analysis. If you figure out that like whoever didn't get – and this is so different from the Heat in this way, because Bosch could just not shoot forever and it'd be fine. Whoever didn't get theirs the last game – like, what if you always bet the over on the guy who didn't get theirs the last game? Like, what if that was the approach for the whole season? Like, I'm fascinated to even document, like, forget betting it, just documenting how this is going to work, where, hey, I'm noticing that, whoever shoots the worst by far of the three, they make an effort that guy scores the most the next game. Because, like, the egos in play here and the obsession almost with having the ball and being, ball-dominant, high-usage players – like that's different than the other big three setups that we've had with other NBA teams. So yeah, from a prop standpoint, like it could end up being almost its own animal, which I think is really interesting.